welcome, sir. Panel of Portfolio Committee on Communication. Just introduce yourself and if there are issues of interest in the sector and particularly CASA, tell us that. Your qualifications and all of those things. Remember, because I like to explain this to all candidates. We've done a security check, we've done qualification check, and we have results. That is why we give everyone an opportunity to tell us as to what is the position. So it's now your opportunity to do that.
Good morning, honorable members, chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come and be interviewed on this critical position. My name is Mashilu Oloka. I currently work in the Department of Telecommunications Postal Services as a chief director responsible for regulatory entities oversight. Just to deal with that matter in terms of section 6.1c around disqualification of the CASA Act, is that we can deal with that alongside section 6.2, which says that once one gets appointed, or if I get appointed, then indeed I will resign from my current position. So that I think we deal with the matter of disqualification. I hold a PhD in media studies with more emphasis on broadcasting. I'm a researcher. I've done a lot of broadcasting. I've written about it. I've been working in the Department of Telecommunication, the then communication, for 7 years as a director responsible for broadcasting policy. Since 2007, for about 7 years, in actual fact, and then the last 3 years I've been doing entities oversight. So in terms of Section 5 around the qualification, experience and expertise of the sector, I think I'm quite I meet those requirements. But there are two things that I think I should emphasise as the ones that I'm bringing to this position. One is around corporate governance. As you are aware, that in terms of Section 3 of the CASA Act, the Council is actually the accounting authority, which is defined in terms of the PFMA. Therefore, there are certain fiduciary responsibilities required of them. This is very important. Even if you look at the current report of CASA, the issue of corporate governance is very, very important. Therefore, that's one thing that I'm bringing, and entities oversight. So I know as an entity, it used to be before the separation of the two departments, telecommunications and DOC, it used to be in my portfolio that I was responsible for its oversight. So I'm quite familiar with that entity and other entities within the sector that it regulates. And then the second issue, or the second important element that I'm also bringing, which is quite key, is around oversight, monitoring, and community engagement. This for me is very important because when you serve in this kind of a way, you don't just sit in the office and expect that things will happen. You need to go and visit the project that the entity is licensing. And I'm doing this from the lessons that I had when I was a board member of the MDDA a few years back. I was a founding board member of the MDDA for 5 solid years. I was amongst those that were responsible for establishing it. And also, when I joined the Department of the then Communication, I was responsible for over 80 community radio stations that were on our support program. And I made sure that despite the fact that I had people that were project managers, go and visit, I also took an effort to go and visit them so that when I'm being asked, whether it's by the minister, the DG, or my principal, even parliament itself, then I have information on hand. I didn't have to rely solely on the report that I got from my subordinates. Therefore, I'm bringing with me a wealth of experience and hard work that I got no doubt that will help in, you know, really making this entity of ours stable and deliver on its mandate, especially given the need for the ICT sector to deliver in accordance with the NDP and the 9-point plan. That's very, very important. It's at the center of our economic development, understanding that the ICTs are enablers. So it's a very important one. Therefore, I think I'll be able to contribute in one or another. Thank you very much.
So you prepared to resign from telecoms for to be a member of the ICASA Council, if you are appointed anyway.
That's the commitment that I'm making, that I will, despite understanding that it's a 4-year contract. Mine's is a permanent one, but I'm prepared to take that risk.
It's exactly for that reason that I'm asking. I mean, being a chief director in telecoms for a very short term, it's interesting to go for that. But anyway, members, that's Mr. Buluka. Can I again start with you, Honorable Shin? And then we go down that way.
Thank you, Chair. I'm interested in your CV that you said that from 2014 to February 2016 in the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services, you were the Director of Broadcasting Industry Development. I didn't know such a thing existed in DTPS. I thought broadcasting went to the Department of Communications. So can you explain that to me? I was, for the past 2 years, been in total ignorance of this. Because it's never come up at our meetings, as far as I can recall. If you were, you know, so heavily involved in broadcasting, that's been your particular interest, why, when the department split, did you not go to communications? Why you stayed with the went to the telecommunications side? Then particularly your involvement with the digital donga. What went wrong with that program, and should it still be kept alive? What, you know, because that obviously was to bring telecommunications to, you know, throughout all South Africa. And it was a good program, and it's vanished. Then what is wrong with ICASA now? How ICASA is run, how it's managed, who it reports to, and what do you think needs to be done to fix it? And why do you believe that you would be a good person to have on the council to fix it?
Thank you very much, Honorable Shin. Just to deal with the first one, you will recall that the separation only occurred in 2014. And by and large, we're still operating on the old organizational structure. I think it's only recently where we have changed it. So we still had, even when I went to the branch called SOC Oversight and Enterprise Development, we were kind of organized along sector, whatever. Then we had broadcasting sector, and then we had postal, and then we got telecoms and IT. We're still organized alongside that up until 20 few years later, when most of the colleagues moved, I think probably towards the end of 2014. So that position I occupied in February. So that was even before the separation occurred. So I continued on that position until I think 2015 or so, until the department reorganized itself. But now it doesn't exist on the structure, because we have to make amends to accommodate the new mandate. Then the second issue, why I stayed. Despite the split, there is still, especially in terms of entities oversight, there are those entities that are still within, that are broadcasting, but they are currently, they are located within the DTPS. One is CENTEC. And then even in terms of ICASA as the regulator, you recall that ICASA currently has got a dual mandate. Part of the mandate is the broadcasting side, which is within the DOC as a department. And then the other side, telecoms and postal, which it still has to regulate, is within the DTPS. So it is for that purpose that we made that conscious decision that not all of us are going to leave. There are those that will ensure that those entities that are still have got that part will remain. And then others left, for those that were dealing with the SABC and ICASA, insofar as broadcasting money is concerned, those left, then I remain behind. And even now, on my portfolio of entities, I've got Centec by and large, and then from the small component of ICASA around telecoms and whatever, especially on making sure that I provide that link between the regulator and the minister on issues relating to the entity. Then the second issue, if you go back to the third issue around digital Zonga Council, when we started planning for digital migration project in 2005, I only joined later in 2007, when the government started, one of the things that became very critical, that was working, the involvement of the partnership between government and the private sector. There were like a lot of planning that went around that, so that involved a lot of private sector. So the department wanted to continue on the same path, and in the policy, it was very clear, the policy that we took to cabinet in 2007 that was approved, that there will be that to ensure that there's coordination between government and the private sector, that kind of a structure should continue. And then being the head of broadcasting policy at that time, I was responsible for initiating the body, making sure that the people are appointed, and making sure that indeed I was actually serving as the secretariat. And it did a lot of work because it did a lot of pre-planning around it. However, I think a decision was taken in 2010, if I'm not mistaken, April 2010, if I still remember, that in certain instances there are conflict of interest. Therefore, I think the then minister took a decision to kind of dissolve that. So it was dissolved. And then the last one, the challenges pertaining to the regulator and what I think I would do. You see, it's so unfortunate, honestly. The ICASA has, I mean, I call it, it's a presenting entity. In other words, it's there, but to a certain extent, I think it's hamstrung. Some are deliberate, some are things beyond its control. One of those, critically, is the lack of financial resources. That's why even if you look at its budget, it's around 400 million, or just over 400 million, and then it's got 437. And then 61% of those of that budget goes towards administration. Now, if you look at the core activities are not being taken care of. The lowest one, which for me is a concern, because if you have to understand, the regulatory trend is not just about making regulation now. It's more about compliance, because regulations can make as many as those, but as long as you don't ensure compliance with them, they are actually ineffective. They've got about 40 sets of regulations spreading across broadcasting, telecoms, postal, and consumer issues, but how do they really enforce that? So I think the issue of the funding model remains a critical element, because at the moment now, and this is very important, every time when this budget cuts across government due to, you know, competing needs, which is currently the situation now due to economic climate and the negative economic climate, they get affected. They are not spared. But and then its mandate will suffer, or on how it does it work will suffer. If you compare it with other regulators, which I thought at one point it was on the same level, whether you talk Ofcom in the US, you talk ACMA in Australia, or CRTC in Canada, I think it has become a shadow. Actually, it's doing little more than they can. They do a lot of work. This is very, very important. So the other part, I think we need to really revamp the governance framework around ICASA. I think it's an entity that was established in 1993. Yes, we made a few amendments later, into when we merged with the with SATRA, But truth be told, I think we have never revisited the governance model to see whether indeed it's really helping the entity to deliver on its work. I'm not saying it's better or not, but just to see whether indeed it enables it to perform its function, especially in the rapidly changing environment, so that we don't... This is the situation. You've got a regulator that is in a rapidly changing environment, but in terms of the way that we do things, it's still linear, it's still old-fashioned, you do regulations, and then have public comments, and then, but still... So the industry changes. Therefore, for me, the need to revive or to take a review at the entire governance model is quite key. Maybe it will improve more efficiency instead of the current model. I'm also saying this because at some point, yes, the Act says, ICASA Act says, the authority or ICASA acts through the council, which means the council itself is a accounting authority, is the board. But at certain instances, I think you see some elements being given to the CEO. And that's why at times you have this kind of acrimonious relationship between the CEO and the council. And those kind of things, I think, let's look at, revisit the whole governance model of the regulator to ensure whether indeed it's able to do that.
Okay. That must be the last question. Your time is up.
There have been many inquiries, and informally perhaps, well, formal inquiries into ICASA's governance structure. There was the Carter Asmal report into the Chapter 9s and what it suggested for ICASA. There was also, and I forget the name of the people who did it offhand, there was one that did looked into the financing of ICASA. Now, these studies have been around for years. Why do you think that they were never adopted or never used into seriously getting ICASA on its feet? Because ICASA basically is a good institution, but it seems to have lacked a viable funding model. All its money goes into national treasury. It has had poor appointments of staff. There's been political interference in it. What do you think was the reason why ICASA has been allowed to languish despite there being some very credible inquiries into what could be done to rectify the situation? What has been the problem? And should ICASA stay as a Chapter 9 organization?
Yes, I do acknowledge those studies, very, very critical ones. But what I want to say is this, that I don't know what is the reason behind them not being, those studies, they recommend those studies not being only speculate. But for me, from my own perspective, and with the knowledge that I have about the industry, not only in South Africa, but externally, you see, you can't just look at ICASA as an entity on its own. You need to look at the whole regulatory framework. And I thought the PRC report around state-owned, the review of state-owned entity provided that. And also even the 9-point plan provided that. And even the comprehensive, the National Integrated Policy Review, I think provides us with that opportunity. Because at the moment, let's look at the ICT. How many regulators do we have which have got a stake in that? It's not only ICASA, we've got FPB. We've got Consumer Commission. We've got the Competition Commission. We've got, which is the other one that one can think of. And so you need to have a comprehensive picture as to what kind of a regulator do you need and then how that regulator should be funded. And we are not the only one in that. UK just completed theirs around Ofcom. So we are not the only one. And one of the issues that they were dealing with is around what kind of mandate should they bring in. Do you still need a classification authority like FPB when you've got a regulator and take into account all this convergence and the accentuation of consumer issues within the sector? Do we still need all these regulators? I think maybe as a country we need a national conversation on the kind of regulator do we want, whether we need one or do we need all this. And I'm saying this within the context of declining public funding. As government no longer have money, but we have money to maintain all of this, or do we need, maybe we need to scale down on the regulator. I'm not saying this is what should happen. I'm just saying, in view of these challenges, we need all this regulation. In other countries, they've scaled down and say either two or three. But the question is, do we still need ICASA in its current form, or do we still need all other entities, or do we need one major regulator that can ensure that everything is being done?
Okay, Honourable Mathis.
I requested to go, Chair, because I've got the Mohale City matter to go this quickly. I'm being intimidated here by people of conscience.
Honorable Kumbelo, don't do that.
Threatening my conscience. Now, you were a chief director under Minister Faith Mutambi, correct? Under who? For 7 years.
For 7 years, I was a director under a number of ministers, starting with the late Mr.
Mutambi is one of them.
No, Mutambi no.
Okay.
Kasaburi, followed by Minister Nyanda, Dainabule, and Pareachi, Karim, never under Mutambi, truth be told.
And then you came, oh, I see. Now, that's fine.
With a very sharp memory, Honorable Member.
Everybody's participating in my... Thank you, Chairperson. I know, isn't it true, though, that you have been part of the governance that has failed this sector, at the center of which has been a failure to regulate competition, to transform ownership patterns? I mean, with the role that you played in your entire reflections, you have not reflected about how under your tenure in those years, I mean, we're making, some people don't even call it progress, we're not making any progress at all, and you've been there. So I need you to reflect on that, and particularly in relation to the fact that now you want to be in the regulator. Are you not bringing the same avalanche of failures to ICASA?
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodoji. Let me start it this way. I disagree in the sense that if you know how government works, there's so much that as an individual you can do. You make recommendations, and then out of those recommendations, a decision has to be made. But that decision, again, has to be taken within a varied element. I'll tell you, when I started at the DOC in 2007, broadcasting was dead in this country. I revived it. And one of those things that I did is reviving the community broadcasting sector. And I'm not saying this to, kind of blow my own trumpet. I think you can go to any community and just mention the name, Boloka. They will tell you the kind of good work that I've done there. I revived the entire sector. I make sure that the sector had enough funding. I'm motivated. I even came to Parliament to motivate for that. For their funding, and I could
for the funding of who?
Of community broadcasting sector,
pay or free?
Community broadcasting sector
in the pay television space or in free to air? Which part that did you fundraise for?
Community broadcasting sector is free. It's free to air platform.
Or all the free to air platforms.
Yes.
Some of them are not, and they call themselves community. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, it's a debate for another. You can ask me later about that. I'm talking about 80 of them. I made sure that there was a signal distribution subsidy for them. I made sure that there was training, effective training, because you cannot run this. Some of them are based on this. I made sure that government supported.
But, brother, that's not transformation. We're talking about dispelling and transforming the heavy ownership in relation to one of the most important concepts of white monopoly capital. That's where everybody is failing. And, Community broadcasting, I understand, it's access and all those things, it's debatable. When I'm talking about transformation, I want, okay, if that's what you have in mind, that's what I have in mind, about that space which is predominated by few companies, majority of which are white-owned. You have failed, or as a country we have failed, and you have been part of a department that has done dololo in that space. What's your reaction to that?
I thought you were saying that, maybe I misunderstood your question, I thought you were saying that I was part of the group that failed this country, right? And therefore, now I want to be in the regular. So I was trying to show you what I've achieved in my 7 years.
Okay, we don't have time, a lot of time together. You can't stand here or sit here and argue that there is a lot of progress in relation to the transformation of in broadcasting, the major part is pay TV, and regulation in that space has failed. The department itself has made, I don't know, I mean, the numbers are not shifting. DSTV remains the biggest actor in that space. So I'm talking about that. Secondly, that's the type of, when you say you're going to transform something, I'm not talking about new initiatives. When you're saying going to shift something from what it was before into something new that is inclusive in terms of ownership and so on and so forth, that's what I'm talking about. What's your reaction to that? Because you want to be in the regulator, I don't know. I mean, I'm afraid you're going to bring the same failures.
If we check on my track record, personally, I don't think I've failed. I'll tell you why. First of all, I'm an advocate of transformation. You can Google. I'm the only person who defined what media transformation is all about. I've written a lot about media transformation. But in respect of the issues that you are raising, you see, I want to start with community broadcasting to show you that transformation doesn't only start there.
I don't have time. The community. I want to know the failure to shift wide hold of the space in terms of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Be direct. That's why I came in to direct you there. I want to hear. I'm saying there is a big failure, admittedly, and you have been part of it because you have been in the department for that long. My fear is you are going to bring, you are just going to take that failure and increase it in ICASA. What is your reaction to that? I'm giving you an opportunity to redeem yourself.
Thank you very much. You see, there's Section 60 of the Electronic Communications Act, which talks about, for me, actually, that's how we can deal with monopolies in the broadcasting space. The first one says very clear, 60.1, 60 section 61. It tells you that no subscription broadcaster should be allowed to have exclusive rights of content, exclusive of sports broadcasting right in the country. That's the first one. Therefore, you need to really make sure that that section is really implemented in its fullest. Then the second one, which is quite key, is honestly, that's the reason why our pay TV is growing at the rate at which even our free-to-air cannot manage. We need to overcome this thing called mass-carrier obligation, because actually it's the one that is giving a subscription broadcasters more, you know, leverage.
You're not proving to me that, you know, you're going to succeed in ICASA. Final question, Chet.
They are doing what? But now, I don't know what to do. They keep saying that. Okay, I want to pursue a different line of questioning. Now, when you are there, part of the worry about you moving from the department and just going to ICASA is its independence. Are you a deployee of the ANC?
I am a deployee of no one but the people of South Africa, which I think, if I appointed the position, I'm going to serve with pride. Because who I
no, pride is not the question. Independence is the question.
Yes.
Will you be able to resist political pressure, for instance, from your former employees?
I served on an entity called MDDA, which requires the same kind of independence
as the regulator. Indeed, I'm prepared to uphold that. Then the second thing, I'm a member of the Institute of Directors of South Africa, which means the assistance standard that I need to uphold as a member. Otherwise, I'll be withdrawn, or otherwise my membership would be cancelled. So I know what it means by independence, which has to be supported by the level of accountability, reporting, transparency, and freedom of expression. Final question. Do you agree, though, that there's been a big failure in terms of contributing to data costs, there's been a big failure to the implementation of DTT and the meeting of that deadline, and that those are the important things that characterize the years in which you were in the department. Do you agree to that?
And that's the last one.
No, I acknowledge that. I think we haven't dealt with in the manner that we should have done.
Thank you. You can move to the next person.
Now I'm being instructed on what to do. Honorable Madisha?
The first. Trove. You see, albeit there are others, even at the level of government, who say that the unemployment rate in South Africa comes to about 27%. I wish to put it to you and all of us that in actual fact the unemployment rate goes beyond 40%. I mean, that's the reality. If you check, you'll be able to see. Now, what I wish to check with you is that should you be appointed this position, what will you do to ensure that broadcasting and postal industries contribute to the development of South Africa, both socially and economically? And what do you think ICASA has got to play in ensuring that we achieve all that for the poor people of our country?
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Madisha. The broadcasting has got a very important role to play in the sense that if you look at local content, that's the industry that is driving California. That's the industry that's driving many of the developing countries, Asia, Japan, and so forth. And that's the industry that we need to nurture. At the moment, and I think we need to change that, we are giving broadcasters an opportunity to decide whether they want to contribute towards local content, or financially, or they can play what you call plug and play, or they can just play the local content quotas. And we haven't used that quite well, honestly. And I think one of the things that we need to do, and I try to do that in anticipation of digital migration, I developed what we call local content development strategy. And key amongst that was to try and shift the attention or the production from three metros, whether it's Johannesburg, which was contributing a lot, about 80, and then 10% coming from that, and then 5 coming from KZN. I wanted to shift that away from that. But we needed to provide funding to create a very good entity that ensured that in this, indeed as a country, we have a local content development agency. We've got NVF, which is currently within arts and culture. But they are more onto film. But if you look at what happened in New Zealand, New Zealand was nowhere when it started. Actually, a lot of its content was coming from Australia. But they created an entity called New Zealand On Air, which provided a lot, especially around television. That's how they managed to create jobs. That's the critical part. So we can do that. Then the postal sector, and I'm saying this within the context of the challenges faced by a post office around distribution delivery, because they still use the old system of delivery, which is very expensive. I mean, I come from an area called, it's behind Bochum in Limpopo, far, I'm actually on the border with Francistown. Now, to deliver a letter, for post office to deliver a letter to Maganjan, is quite expensive. Now, one of the things that honestly we need to review is the distribution model. Can we allow even role players that can be, you know, run postal services at, you know, at smaller scale in those areas, in that way that they will take post from Polokwane and then to deliver that. Post office can then deliver to the major centers. Because at the moment, post office is to deliver a letter, one letter from Johannesburg to
Umtata. Maybe what I didn't explain was that you share 5 minutes with the member. Question and answer. It's 5 minutes. So you'll have to be, in your responses, it's good that you make examples with Bochum, but just be very pointed when you respond.
No, go to Ele. I think we can take the next question. I think I understood what he said. Now, the next question that I wish to put to you, sir, is that, look, from my side, I'm assured that you will agree that when it comes to consideration for the appointment to any position of public office, personal integrity, okay, must be the number one characteristic. Be for the department, whether it's a clerk, a position in office of the president, etc., etc. And at the moment you are holding this position of chief director, it's quite high. What are you then looking at, Latwa, to make sure that you have something in the plastic bag, etc.? I'm just putting it that so the issue of integrity is extremely important. Can you clarify that?
Dr. Marisha, I've worked hard to be where I am. If you know my area, with no opportunities at all. And for me, to be a doctor in media studies and to contribute even, I mean, when I got appointed to head, I mean, to be a first member of the MDDA a few years back, and even now, I've managed a lot of projects, but I'm telling you, you can ask anyone, and I hope even in my, credit checks or whatever, you wouldn't see my name associated with tenders or misappropriation of funds, because I know what accountability of funding mean. I mean, for that community radio project, get over 80 million rands, and I've managed that quite successfully.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's no plastic bags. Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson.
Teddy?
Mr. Bullock, you Dow ICASA reports to the Department of Communication, but part of the mandate falls within this department, Telecommunications and Postal Services. Don't you think this, in one or another, creates challenges in terms of accountability for ICASA Kandela, in a way?
It does. And I'm saying so within the context of being responsible for the telecoms and postal side of things. Because at one point they will tell you, no, we account to Minister of Communication and not DTPS. I think it does, honestly, does create a lot of a problem. Because even from a budgeting point of view, sometimes you don't know, because in terms of the agreement that was signed between the two ministers on the working relationship.
So if appointed a council, how do you find yourself dealing with this particular challenge?
Well, I'm happy that there is that MOU that was signed between the two ministers at the, you know, in front of the president, around how they need to work together. Key amongst that, it's very clear that Minister of Telecommunication or the regulator must account to the Minister of Telecommunication Postal on matters between telecoms and postal. And for that purpose, they must also, I mean, the Minister of Telecoms and Postal must ensure that there is budget set aside for telecoms and postal responsibilities, even though it's kind of a difficult one, but that's how
okay.
the MOU.
Okay. As it stands now, do you think ICASA has got enough teeth to bite from the compliance point of view?
Like I said in my introductory, no. It doesn't. That's why I use the word presencing. They are there. Presencing is a term that is used in leadership, that you are there, but you're not visible. You are there, you're not making decisions. And I think that's where lies the problem. That's why we one of the sad stories, I mean, the public broadcasters floundered under their watch because they are supposed to do that, to monitor compliance with the broadcasting charter. Look at the issue of monopolies in the broadcasting sector. Look at postal sector. Look at so I think they haven't done one. But like I said, it's nice to apportion blame. But look at the resources that they have, which to a certain extent I think hamper them. Maybe we need to address that first, and then we can.
Okay. The fact that councillors of ICASA are full time, surely there will be instances where employees will refer even issues that are supposed to be handled administratively by the executives to the councillors. If you were to be appointed a councillor, how do you find yourself dealing with this particular challenge?
You see, like I said, in terms of ICASA Act and the PFMA, ICASA Council is actually the board. Yes, they are full-time, but they're actually executive board. And I think it's not the only entity that has got these dual structures of governance that are full-time. But that tells you that there shouldn't be a way in which the council should bypass executive management led by the CEO, because you are creating a problem. A situation whereby a council does certain projects with certain managers without the involvement of the CEO create the problem in terms of accountability for those senior managers. Because at the end of the day, is the CEO that has to do performance appraisal for the same senior managers, not the council. You are actually creating an instability within an organization. So one of the most important issues, that's why I talked about the governance framework. Is it adequate? We need to separate to make sure that the council does what it's supposed to do. It needs to act on the recommendation.
The last one, have a look. Can you advise the Minister of Communications on digital maturation? I'm sure you're aware that we have missed the deadline. Can you advise the Minister for us to ensure that this time around we don't miss this deadline?
A few years back, and I'm telling U.S. parliamentarians, I made two recommendations when we started with the project, when I joined the department in 2007. I made only two recommendations. I said, let's have a legislation for DTT so that we can clarify rules and make sure the minister has got powers, legislative powers. And I even made an example of countries such as the US at that time, Italy, Spain, which were, I think, very, very advanced. That's the first recommendation that I've made. Then the second one was around the subsidy scheme. I said, there's no way in which we can provide subsidy at the level of manufacturing, because if you do that, you are actually transferring the risk to government. And unfortunately, those were never taken. And whoever minister that came, I still made those recommendations. People said, no, it will take too long to migrate. I said, it's better to take long, but knowing that there's certainty, because when you've got legislation, it gives you certainty, it gives you powers. It doesn't need to be a long legislation. U.S. has got a two-pager on DTT.
Okay. I think we're done with the, but ICASA, it will be a very short question. ICASA, does it belong to institutions supporting democracy or not? And if yes, elaborate. If no, elaborate.
Let's look at the history behind it. That if you look at Section 192, which was formulated as South Africa was going through transition,
then it was very important to ensure that broadcasting, I think, serves that purpose. It's there to support democracy from a broadcasting point of view, understanding the role that broadcasting plays in any democracy. For that, I think, yes. But in terms of telecoms and postal, I don't think that's where it should be. But unfortunately, in view of convergence, it ended up being that way. But I still feel, in relation to broadcasting, I think it's a justifiable case. But it's one of those policies that I think as a country we need to visit. I'm writing a paper on policies of transitions, which have become a kind of an albatross for us as a country. We did them in 1993 as part of fast-tracking transformation, and we haven't changed them. And unfortunately, they're here with us now.
Thank you very much. Become law. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks, thanks for the responses. Go well. I understand you live in Gauteng. It looks like all candidates that we're interviewing are from Gauteng. Thank you very much. I'm sure you know the process.